second episode here of the Market Insights, our brand new podcast from Stockbox with Charles Archer. It's good to be talking to you again so soon, Charles. I know we did the Panther Metals on our inaugural podcast last week. I think it went well, didn't it? I think we both enjoyed it and had some good feedback from it. How do you feel?
I think it was wonderful talking to Darren and needling him about what his future plans are. And it's good.
Indeed, needling him. It's good to have someone else like you on board as well, with your knowledge as well, who can perhaps ask different questions to me or push a bit more. And we managed to get some real interesting things from Darren. So, he's now got to deliver that. But we're not talking about Darren today. And as part of the Market Insights podcast, sometimes we'll have CEOs on. Sometimes it'll just be me and you having a chat about either multiple stocks or a stock in particular. And if they go hand in hand with your article writing as well, all the better. So today we're going to be talking about Rome Resources, a purely focused podcast on Rome, who of course completed that RTO today. We're recording this on Friday, the 26th of July. They completed that RTO into Pathfinder Minerals. And I've interviewed Klaus and the CEO of Pathfinder recently on Rome Resources there. But we're here to talk about it and talk about the asset in the DRC, the tin market, and their plans. It sounds certainly like they've got plans to really hit the ground running. Now they've got that RTO completed, funds will get released, and they should hopefully start executing on those ambitious plans. But yeah, let's start by just talking about the asset, really, the tin project in the DRC. These guys have sort of come from Alphamin, haven't they, originally, who were just next door?
It's literally just next door to Alphamin. Alphamin produces already from its flagship Busy between 3 and 5% of the world's global tin production. It's the highest grade tin project in the world. It's right next door. The management team at Rome Resources discovered Busy while at Alphamin. And now this is effectively their second bite of the apple at the adjacent project. And effectively, to my mind, it's you couldn't ask for a better exploration team. You couldn't ask for a better management team. You couldn't ask for a better asset. It's going to be all roses, in my view.
So these guys have done this before then, from Alphamin, effectively. And then what was the story there? Do you know much about Alphamin, the project, and how that got sort of moved on to a bigger boys?
Well, I think that the key thing that you really want to know is Alphamin is worth $1.3 billion Canadian dollars. It's up 325% over the past 5 years. Okay. If you want to know nothing else and take that away, the idea is you want to replicate this with Rome. But the biggest thing to understand is that, again, highest grade tin deposit in the world, and we're exploring the adjacent deposit where it looks like you have very similar geology.
Yes, yeah, a part of the same system then.
Yeah, exactly. It's particularly interesting. I mean, the anomaly that they're going for, it's in the same geological setting and along the same structure, which hosts Alphamin's and Palmer North and South deposits. So you've already had some a first phase of drilling has been completed at Mount Tacoma. So you've got multiple mineralized shear zones that are intersected over more than 200 meters width. Mineralization open in all directions. Reconnaissance drilling has already been completed. And going forward, you're going to have this really strong period of news flow. You have multiple drilling rigs, drilling multiple holes across the projects. So you're going to get the saves back over the course of the next 6 months. And then hopefully some kind of, by the end of the year, potentially, some kind of initial JORC resource is what I suspect Rome is aiming for.
Yeah, it's quick, isn't it? It's quick to get to that JORC resource. I mean, I think I asked Klaus, why are Alphamin not taking on this if it's just next door and it's looking like the continuation? I think, if I remember correctly, his answer was they've got enough to go at.
Yeah, 100%. They're still exploring their own kind of licenses. My perspective is, Alphamin is just a very obvious buyer for this asset should they uncover what they want to uncover. But then
plan, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Again, talking to Klaus, you probably know more, that really is the chance to go at it, explore, get a JORC done, and then really look to, sell that into Alphamin or someone else.
Yeah, well, I mean, they could sell it into someone else. There's plenty of people who'd be interested in it, especially given that Alphamin has built a lot of the required infrastructure that you would be able to use in terms of roads, and just logistics and infrastructure. But yes, I mean, they could sell it to Alphamin. They, you know, if it's large enough, it might be large enough to, and I think it possibly could be, to build their own mine. But, you know, this is an exploration campaign. They put the, you know, more drills down. They get the grades that they're hoping for. Again, hoping for world-class grades along the lines of Busy. And then you just have a natural buyer right there. I mean, the fact that the exploration team at Rome discovered Alphamin's deposit, you know, and you had Klaus was involved there as well. I mean, it kind of screams, this is the idea. We're just going to go explore it. We'll take on the exploration risk, even though it feels relatively limited. And then you pay us when we find, you know, what we're looking for.
And I mean, Klaus as well is an interesting character, isn't he? And I know you're speaking quite highly of him. I don't know much about him. I've spoken to him once, interviewed him once on Stockbox. Know about his history, and he certainly seems like a guy who certainly knows his stuff, knows the area very well, the DRC, and he said the team. Because I know that we'll talk about it in a minute about the sort of the concerns around projects in the DRC for multiple reasons, conflicts, but also, you know, child labour. We've heard of that in cobalt, for example. So it doesn't have the best reputation when it comes to mining. But the team, Klaus was telling me that they've had a lot of experience in the DRC, and that's what really he thinks means they can replicate the success that they already have seen in Alphamin.
I've said it before. I mean, publicly said it before. The DRC isn't a jurisdiction that I tend to go for, and the only exception I'll make is if I think the management team have got the political firepower to get projects over the line, to retain licenses, to keep the government on side, to deal with, you know, potential conflict. Klaus has that political firepower. He's only as a strategic advisor at the moment, but he's had more than two decades of experience developing deposits, including in the DRC. He founded Moto Gold Mines, which was discovered more than 20 million ounces of gold, and was acquired by Randgold Resources, which later became Barrick, incorporated into Barrick for $500 million back in 2009. And again, Klaus, he founded and chaired Alphamin, you know? But beyond that, he founded and chaired AVZ Minerals, and that you know, left before the business got into, you know, political problems. But he discovered Manono, which is possibly the largest hard rock lithium deposit in the world. So you've got you know, on top of Klaus, you've also got a Mark Gasson, the CEO and president. Again, you know, alongside Jamie Anderson, the exploration manager, these are the guys, you know, discovered the Busy Tin project next door, but they also have such amazing CVs that it's very difficult to see how you'd run into any kind of issues. Now, specifically on the conflict, I'm not a political or conflict analyst. Obviously, in recent days, there's been headlines on North Kivu, which is the province in which Busy and Busy North sits. But, you know, a lot of people kind of like, especially if you're in the UK, people don't realize how massive Africa is and how big the DRC is. But it's you know, we're talking about whether the violence might impact on Rome. You know, these eastern provinces have been in conflict of some kind for decades, and this hasn't hurt Alphamin. Again, as we say, you know, they're up well over 350% in the past 5 years. And it is true that North Kivu, it sees, you know, a reasonable share of violence, and you've got the usual cocktail of political rivalries and land disputes and mineral interests. But, a really brief history. Back in April 2023, so just over a year ago, there was a ceasefire agreed with M23. These are rebels backed by Rwanda. And this kind of reduced the hostilities for several months. The peace broke down in October because effectively there were these confrontations between M23, these Rwandan rebels, and Wazalendo, which is a youth self-defense group based off of DRC locals. So it's in the politics, again, this is why you need someone like Klaus. You need someone who's able to like deal with any kind of political problems. But you had these renewed tensions. But the basic point that you need to understand is that Busy and Busy North, the closest town is Biruwe, the largest city is Goma, but the distance from these mines to the border region between Uganda and Rwanda and the DRC, where all of the violence is occurring, it's over 200 miles away. It's via dirt roads. Some of it is impassable. I mean, if you talk, like the locals say, it'll take like a 15, maybe 20-hour drive. Yes, there can, you know, the violence could spill over. There might be jurisdictional risk, but the fighting is so far away, and operations at Alphamin are just unaffected. In fact, they just saw their tin production and sales jump, I think something like 25% in the last quarter. So it's something that you don't really need to worry about. I'm not worried about it at all.
Okay.
Obviously, that can change, but I think it's very unlikely to. It's something that's been longstanding for a long time. It's just been in the headlines recently.
Yeah, and what about the sort of the geopolitical risk then? And what are the politics like? Do you know much about that in terms of how supportive the government are of these kind of projects, but also exporting product or getting cash out of the country?
I think that, you know, the DRC is obviously, mining is really important to its economy, and exploration has obviously been going on for years and years. Majors have operated in the country with issues sometimes, but, you know, pretty much for decades and decades. And the government, the basic thing is the same with all governments, and you say this about the UK government and the US and every government, they want money, right? So as far as they're concerned, as long as the tax gets paid, they're perfectly happy, and they want these deposits to be developed, because other than tax, you also get infrastructure, you get skilled jobs, and yes, there's always going to be some kind of local opposition wherever you develop a mine, and this is the case whether you're talking about the Barroso Lithium project in Portugal, or you know, or like various projects going on in Ontario or Athabasca in Canada, or even like, you know, down my way in Cornwall, where, you know, new mines for potentially lithium or tin, there's been some kind of opposition. You'll always get local opposition when you want to build a mine, but these are critical minerals that the world needs, and it does massively improve local economies and bring tax into the government. Having said that, it is a difficult jurisdiction to navigate, and this is why you need a strategic advisor. You need somebody like Klaus who knows how to navigate it properly, who has been doing it for decades and has very strong relationships with political figures in the country.
Yeah, I think that is key, isn't it? And he has those links, doesn't he?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. His involvement in the company is, for me, one of the key selling points in terms of making the investment case, both to myself as an investor, but also to anybody else. If you have Klaus on board, then as long as he's sticking around, then you're going to have a connection to a government that means that you're unlikely to run into the same jurisdictional problems that other companies potentially have done.
And he's definitely sticking around, isn't he? I think he definitely wants to replicate.
Forever and ever and ever. Do you know, well, this is the thing. He founded Alphamin, right? Which has been going for years and years. And now he's back for round two for the second
bite.
Do you know, if you're thinking, oh, is he just going to be here for a few months? Well, no, he didn't do that last time, and he made loads and loads of money, and now he wants to do it again. And that's, you know, and obviously anyone who's investing with him will be along for the same roller coaster ride.
Exactly. And it's always, you know, and that's a big thing, though, isn't it, as well? You know, we talk about, interview a lot of people, you do write articles on companies. When it comes to, you know, you've got the asset, of course, but you've got the people, and the people have got to be driven and excited. You talk about that roller coaster ride, you know, the story's got to be exciting, hasn't it? You've got to have a CEO who's passionate about it and is taking people along for that exciting ride as well. And you definitely get the impression with Klaus, he's got energy, he's got the knowledge, he's got the experience, he's got the track record. Like you say, it's like it makes it more fun. It's like, this is round two, we're going for it, and come along for it. It's a bit more, I suppose it's fun is the word. Less corporate, more fun. I don't know.
Well, it's enjoyable, isn't it? I mean, just clearing my throat. I run mining.co.uk, junior resource companies listed on AIM, and the one thing that gets people's interest and gets investors and liquidity and positivity is exploration, but predominantly drilling. We want to see drilling. We want to see a drill go in the ground. We want you to pull out a core sample. We want to see it logged. We want to see it assayed. And we want to see those results come back to the market, hopefully with a gazillion percent tin, which I'm imagining will happen with this particular asset. But yes, this is a bit, not only do you want like really positive management, you also want to see that, you know, things are kind of speeding along. I mean, another company that possibly worth mentioning, because they recently IPO'd as well, is Helix Exploration. Do you know Helix at all, Mark?
Helix, possibly.
And again, they're going to have two drilling campaigns this year for helium. So yeah, a very, you know, different part of the world, different commodity, but to my mind, it's similar urgency we're going to, you know, get cracking. We've got these assets. We're going to drill. We're going to tell you what's going to come out of the ground. That's going to hopefully be fantastic.
Yeah, exactly.
Versus companies, again, you know, you do have to do some surface exploration to know where you want to, you know, target your drills. And to be fair to Rome, before, you know, this RTO today, they've already done a massive amount of initial work, including, you know, some initial drilling. But it's the fact that you're able to jump in at this stage of a story, which is probably the most exciting bit, I would say, where you're kind of pre-resource, but you've got enough information to know you're almost certainly going to get something pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, let's talk about the plans then. I mean, now, of course, they have completed that RTO. Any monies that have been raised will be released, and they're hitting the ground running, aren't they? You know, to get a JORC by year end, well, got less than 6 months now to do it, but they're on track, aren't they? Multiple rigs, I think, are going to be turning quite soon.
Well, I'm hoping for at least two, potentially three, but, you know, they're kind of keeping those cards close to their chest. But I imagine having done the RTO, there'll be a series of RNSs next week. What's going to come? But, you know, you're covering, you know, maybe up to three targets, 1,200 to 1,800 meters a month. And it's commencing, you know, when I say imminently, I don't mean in Q4 or in Q1 next year. Imminently means essentially right now. And you should get the assays coming about within weeks. And then because you have multiple rigs, and multiple sets of assays should have regular news flow across the half. The thing is actually when you say, you know, what's the corporate strategy? There obviously there's lots of information that, you know, is out there. Busy North, it comprises two licenses and they cover 38.4 square kilometers. Rome's got a 51% indirect interest in both permits, but they can increase their interest in both of those permits substantially should they choose to. But the RTO, so Rome signed the heads of terms with Pathfinder. Drilling at Monte Gomo and infill drilling at Claudia is the plan. And these assets are just, you know, in my mind anyway, objectively, and nobody can change it, they're fantastic. At Monte Gomo, you know, you copper mineralization, you had one hole 41 meters at 3.52% copper from 139 meters. You know, silver assays 15.1 meters, 57.74 gram per ton in the same hole. You got zinc mineralization. I mean, one of the things that I find quite exciting about this asset the project in particular is that the targets are very kind of different types of mineralization. So with Kalayi, there's no significant copper or zinc mineralization. So it's really like comparable to Alphamins and Palmer mineralization. It's going to be like pure tin, which is quite exciting because, you know, obviously this is a tin play. But with Monte Gomo, you're hoping to get, not hoping, there's a lot of evidence that it's polymetallic. So you may have, you know, potentially maybe slightly lower tin grades, but you're going to get lots and lots of different metals. And so if you're talking about like in the far-flung future, or even when you're like building the JORC resource, you kind of have two bites of the apple when it comes to risk appetite, because you could either say, right, with Monte Gomo, we can build a plant and like diversify our risk in terms of minerals, or we can go for Kalayi and just go for tin, so you have lots of optionality. And again, those are just two targets across, you know, this entire kind of quite substantial land package.
Absolutely. And I mean, what's the tin market looking like as well at the moment, in from your point of view, Charles?
So tin is kind of on a tear almost, isn't it? I mean, it's the same with many of these kind of resources and critical minerals. The bottom line is that they're trying to think of the words, we need more critical minerals. There aren't enough. And therefore, you're seeing, you know, whether it's tin or copper or, you know, various other kind of really important metals, the prices just keep going up and up and up. And it's because, you know, regardless of whether, you know, any concerns about jurisdiction, there's a supply challenge. And tin is one of those metals that's very difficult to substitute for. So with copper, you know, sometimes you can substitute with aluminium, and lithium, for example, sometimes you can substitute with sodium, but with tin, in the applications that you use tin for, you do just need the tin. You know, tin is 37% higher than the lowest price during the last 12 months. Obviously, the energy transition is a big part of it, but you've got big disruptions to countries that have traditionally contributed to the global market share. And I guess the rise of artificial intelligence. So, you know, more generally, you just have this increased demand in electronics and electrification. But I mean, for me, one of the key points to understand is it's quite a small market, in, you know, compared to things like iron ore or copper, for example. So what that means is it's generally fairly volatile. And at times where the supply is quite low, like now, and demand is quite high, you tend to see that the price goes, you know, upwards fairly quickly. You saw this back in 2011. So in 2008, financial crisis, tin was around $10,000 a ton, and then it tripled to $30,000 by 2011 during the global economic recovery. And exactly the same, you know, COVID-19 pandemic, obviously, you know, this is not tin specific, but everything crashed. Tin prices dropped to sort of $13,000-ish per ton during March 2020. And then by 2021, it surged, you know, it doubled and doubled again to $39,000 per ton on the LME. So, you know, it's kind of the case that where you have this kind of perfect storm where like these major suppliers of tin around the world are just struggling with production problems or just general market disruptions, while at the same time demand for tin is rising because of external factors like global artificial intelligence. In steps Rome Resources, and so like we're possibly going to find an extension to what is already one of the biggest producers and also the highest grade tin project globally. We're right next door, and we're going to explore using the exact same team that discovered that original asset. I mean, that's a good story, right? I mean, mind it is. We can delve, if you like, and, you know, into the technicals and into the drilling results and all of the surface exploration, and all of it is very, very exciting and very, very technical. But the bottom line is that you've got the right management team. You've got a metal which is becoming more and more in demand. You've got the funding now to do, you know, a significant amount of drilling. And also you refine the target so much that if it doesn't come back with something really exciting, I'll be incredibly disappointed.
Indeed, I think that's a great note to finish on. And like you say, that the tin market not going anywhere, hard to replicate, perhaps not as sexy as something like gold, but you know,
yeah, it's here. But it makes me laugh. I was literally, I put blog posts out. I was talking the other day about the sexy mineral of the year.
And what is it?
It makes me feel a bit sick. Well, this year I think it might be gold, just you know, how high it's got. Yeah, uranium, yeah, potentially.
Next
year it might be copper, I think. Copper might be the one that, you know, everyone kind of falls in love with. We know that 2021 was lithium, I would say. Maybe 2019 was cobalt. That was kind of a big thing. I guess 2020 was oil, because obviously, or maybe 2022 was oil. But you kind of like, you get this feeling for it, don't you? Where like, if you have an asset in a particular commodity, it just, you know, your share price soars no matter what, just because it happens to be what's in vogue. And at the moment, I think it is gold, just because how high gold is going, and just obviously all the politics around it. But I think things like tin. I don't think it will ever be like the sexy mineral, because again, the market for it is quite small and specialized. Yeah. But you don't know, these things can change very quickly. And if you keep seeing the same production issues with kind of major producers around the world. And then the other thing is, if you look at AIM in, you know, all like the small cap market in general, because it's a small, as tin is a small market, there aren't many companies. The only one that I can think of from the top of my head is Andrada. And again, they've done, you know, pretty well over the past few years, dropped off a little bit recently, but they've had a great success story. And so I guess, you know, when you're looking for like tin opportunities, if you want to do exploration, Rome is pretty much the only thing I can think of in London that you can go for. And you know, as someone, I quite often, you know, I say this to a lot of people, like I have a diversified portfolio of multiple stocks. I don't, you know, just pick one or two and just go, you know, hell for leather. And a part of, you know, diversification, especially if you're going into junior resource, you want to diversify by geography, but also by mineral. And if you want to invest in tin, I guess there's only a couple of choices. And for me personally, as someone who likes a little bit of risk, I'd say Rome is
a good, yeah.
It's exciting, isn't it? It's fun.
It's exciting, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
What are you going to be looking out for then, Charles? I mean, obviously we're getting to that jork, but what are the sort of key things that you'll be keeping an eye out for, or, you know, in terms of activities, but also what sort of results those activities deliver?
Well, I think the first thing is you know, they say multiple drill rigs. Does that mean two or three? I'm hoping three. That's the first thing I want to see. You want to see the Lognan come back. But what you want to see is you want to see world-class tin grades. You want to see something analogous to what was discovered at Alfheim in their early stages of exploration. And obviously, Alfheim is publicly traded. You can go back, you can look at, you know, essentially you can see for yourself in the early Alfheim RNSs what you want to be seeing for Rome. But the general idea is, you know, really high grade tin, really good quality, kind of quite easy to process as well. Obviously, you won't be able to know that until you've done like mineralogical studies and metallurgical studies. But you want to see world-class grades of tin. And the other thing is, I was talking about a polymetallic target earlier. Obviously, tin. This is a tin play. So don't get me wrong. Don't misquote me. This is a tin play, but this is also the DRC and the mineralization that you have there. You don't know what kind of like surprises you might find once you start drilling underground. And if they find something else that isn't tin but is also, you know, really valuable, that could also be quite exciting.
But when it comes to tin grades, what would be a good tin grade to look out for then? People who are perhaps not familiar with tin grades.
The joy of tin grade. So, it's kind of what I would say. I wouldn't say technical, but it's, you know, it's something that you, I don't know how I can put it. So, obviously, you've got the deposit type, right? So, whether it's hydrothermal veins or placer or skarn deposits. And so, you know, the grade can like vary. If you've got an easier deposit with a slightly lower grade, then that's fine. If you've got a really high tin grade, but the deposit is a bit tricky to mine, then obviously you've got different kind of trade-offs. But, you know, effectively, if it's a skarn deposit, you can have really high grade variability, but, you know, generally between 0.5 to sort of 3.5% tin. Placer deposits, which are like kind of smaller, you know, you can even go, you know, to as low as 0.1% tin. Hydrothermal vein deposits kind of 1 to even as much as 5%, you know. But for context, Alfheim has a tin grade in Empalma North of 4.5%. And this is, you know, consistently the world's highest grade tin resource. So if you see 4.5% coming out of those assays from Visiting North, then you know that they've got the goods that you definitely want. But the key thing to understand is that if it's higher than 4.5%, we can all buy champagne and go on holiday. That's fantastic. But if it's lower than 4.5%, but still, even in the 2 to 4% range, it's still very, very good compared to other deposits around. And and because you have so much infrastructure at the Alfheim mine, at Busy itself, You also have kind of a natural buyer, because they're going to want to ensure that they have enough tin for production for decades to come. And so having invested so much money in the capital expenditure in building the mine, as much feed as they can get, you know, for year after year after year, as long as the tin grade is good enough, it'll be something that's easily saleable. But yeah, I mean, my perspective, I mean, I'm hoping for 4.5%. That's kind of my magic number, because that aligns with Empalma North. But again, you have to consider the polymetallic nature of some of the targets. So if you have a lower tin grade, but it's brought up by other metals, it might be, for example, that you might have a tin grade of 4%, but then because you have things like copper or zinc or various other by-credits, the amount of money you can get out of the ground by processing it is higher than a 4.5% tin grade. The thing is, it's so much more complex than that. It's so much more complex because there's so many... when assays come out of the ground, people talk about people talk about, oh, this is the grade of the tin or of the copper or of the gold or of the lithium or whatever else. And yes, the grade is really important, but it's only kind of half the story. It's also about the metallurgy, the kind of deposit it is, how difficult it is to mine, whether you've got buy credits. Is it, for example, is it on a flat bit of the ground or is it on a hill? Can make a big difference, especially when you want to start a pit. So it, all those sorts of things. I would lie. I'd be lying if I didn't say I was hoping for 4.5%, because that would be world class. That would be kind of major headlines.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's one thing we can look out for then, isn't it? Well, thank you for that, Charles. That's good to get a bit of a context on the grades. And thank you very much for doing this podcast with us again on the market insights. It's great to cover Roam Resources. I'm sure we'll be covering them a lot more now that they've got the article completed.
Yes, I hope so. I think we're going to get a lot of news flow in the next few weeks.
Thank you, as always, Charles. Take care.
Bye, Mark.